Good morning. My name is Taylor Weech, and you are listening to Praxis, a brand new local politics and some state. Today we're going to be talking a little bit of national politics, as we usually don't. It's Monday, as you know, and I'm going to be playing mostly a series of interviews that I pre-recorded with a good friend of mine named Emmett Hartley. He is a, I think he's 23-year-old Spokane resident, and he has been on a little journey to see how accessible the presidential electoral process is. He is a Ron Paul supporter. You'll hear him talk about that later in the interview. And I have a few clips from that to play and then a little discussion after that. I'm hoping to be able to, at some point, play the entirety of the interview or more of it in future shows. But for now, we only have time for some. We got a little carried away talking together since we're good friends and both chatty people. And it ended up being close to 2 hours long rather than the hour that we have this morning. So I'm going to just start off with Emmett introducing himself, explaining why he's looking to be involved in the presidential campaign the way that he is, and just some of his motivations and what he found. First, he describes getting elected as a delegate in his precinct and then going to the county convention. So I think this first part is mostly just the caucus process itself. So here is Emmett Hartley and myself, Taylor Weech, your host, talking last week about his experience.
I'm Emmett Hartley, and I live on the South Hill, sort of by Ferris, and I recently made it a point to go to as many political events as I could, or all of the different things that the Republican Party does to pick its presidential nominee. I wanted to be there and see it with my own eyes, and just feel like I didn't want to be counted among those that didn't do anything. I know many people, I've spoken to many people in the last several months that feel like they just have this mentality that they don't really care what happens, or they care enough to think about it and talk about it, but they don't care about enough about it to actually try and have an influence on it. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to see for myself just how accessible it is and what really goes. I would have never gotten involved with this at all if I didn't think that I could have some sort of voice in what happens, and I just wanted to see how much of a voice I could have. And so I decided to kind of throw down the gauntlet and put my heart and soul into it and make sacrifices to be there. And there weren't that many sacrifices to make. It was a very simple, easy thing to do. I just had to put a little bit of research into it and find out where to be and when, and say my thing and, you know, raise my hand when they say all those in favor.
So what is the process like from the beginning when you decided to do all this?
Well, the first step was, Washington State is a caucus state. We don't have a primary election in this state. There's two different ways that the Republican Party and the Democratic Party pick their nominee, and that's with a primary election, which is a lot similar to how a real election would go. You get it mailed a ballot and you fill in your bubble for who you want and send it in.
We do that in Spokane too.
Yeah. But for the presidential election and for the Senate and stuff too, every 2 years, the way that the caucus system works in Washington State, and I imagine it's just minor variations from state to state, but the way I went about it was looking up on the internet on the Spokane GOP, and there was a front page thing that basically walked you step by step how to go about registering yourself to be, or how to be a delegate to the county convention. And the way that you do that is by going to your caucus and either having someone else nominate you or nominating yourself. And basically it's like kind of like having a miniature election in your classroom, like when you were in grade school. Everybody there gets to raise their hand and say yes or no, and you have as many votes as there are delegates to choose. In my precinct, there were seven delegates coming out of my precinct, but many precincts have more people in them than mine does. live in a small residential area, but in more densely populated areas or in larger precincts, they had to have, they rent out libraries to host them in, and there were several hundred people there. Only 44 people showed up at my precinct, but there were, it still felt like there were a great deal of people there because it was hosted in a house in my neighborhood. We got there at around 8 o'clock in the morning, I think it was, when it started. The first order of business after the introductions and saying the Pledge of Allegiance was to... well, first of all, when we first arrived, you have to sign a piece of paper that has all the necessary information for them to verify that you are a registered voter in the county, and that basically you say that you have to say you're a Republican. It's not like a legally binding thing or anything like that. It's just they want to know that you're not gonna when you are eventually elected to be a delegate, you have to say that you're a Republican and that you won't participate in any other party's primary that year, which I thought was some kind of interesting. That
what are you supposed to do if you're an independent who's interested in candidates from both parties? That's just not allowed.
I do know that we had the option of just saying undecided on the on the page. So you don't necessarily have to declare who your candidate that you support is. And so there's nothing to stop you from just, like, saying that. From myself, for example, I don't really consider myself a Republican. I consider myself a Libertarian. And I support Congressman Paul because he is much more of a Libertarian than he is a Republican. He just realized that the in order to get televised and make his name mean something in the American public's mind... he would have to be on the nationally televised debates, and the only way that he could do that, I can't remember what the requirements are for being a third-party candidate and getting into the debates, but, you know, as you can imagine, as the evidence points out, it's not an easy thing to do because there were none of them on the debates this year.
Mm-hmm. So you can only caucus at one of the two parties, Republican or Democrats, conventions, is what you think?
That was the way that this little, like, affidavit thing read at the bottom of the registration papers for that I got when I was elected to be a delegate. So it only really applies to if you're a delegate or not. You kind of have to say, I'm not going to go and fight for the other side, because that would kind of be, like, in their eyes, cheating or whatever.
So what does a person do who's an independent who is interested in candidates from both parties?
Well, I do know that when we went to the caucus, you don't have to, you can write in as your preferred candidate, just undecided, and you don't have to declare. And there's nothing to stop you from, you know, kind of pretending to, you know, be more loyal to the party than you actually are. That's definitely was my case, for instance. I don't really consider myself a Republican. I have, you know, most of my family members consider themselves Republicans. Like I said, my uncle was a Republican commissioner in Grant County, and it's kind of what I grew up with. But now that I've grown older and have lived through a couple elections and then gotten to see the results of those elections, I no longer feel, and I think this is something that resonates with almost anyone nowadays, like, no matter who you talk to, the two-party system is just maddeningly backward. It's going nowhere. Everybody knows it's all bought and paid for, especially in light of the Citizens United situation.
So basically, I mean, what it comes down to is that you can be undecided within the party, but unless you want to decide a party, you can't really fully participate. Is that fair to say?
Sort of. I mean, yeah, it's definitely as you go further along in the process, but on the outset, it's not that way. And like I was saying, there's nothing to stop you from lying or pretending. And I don't know if there would be any repercussions of you attending another party's caucus or being a delegate in another party. For I don't really know if the Washington's or if the Democrats are even having, you know, because they're going to run Obama, so I don't know if they're
so
even bothering going through
it. Point, but I'm wondering about mostly like the independents and third parties and.
And see, I don't even know how those smaller parties organize their candidate picking process.
Process was the end of that word that got cut off, and we continued to talk then in that interview, and neither of us knew what the third party process was to pick a candidate. And we've only seen a couple what you could call successful third party candidates in recent memory, most notably Ross Perot. And I did a little research on this afterwards, since I was only about 5 or 6 years old when Ross Perot ran. A lot of what he did was he founded a third party, the Reform Party, but it was mostly funded by his own significant fortune that he had. So a lot of times the barrier is money to having enough to run the large scale presidential campaign that you need to run nationwide to get the exposure to win in the system that we have is close to impossible without the large, established, centuries-old two main parties behind you. Let's see. So on our friend Wikipedia, ballot access laws are also a major challenge to third-party candidacies. Democrats and Republicans usually easily obtain ballot access in all 50 states, but third parties often fail to meet criteria for ballot access, such as registration fees, petition requirements in which a certain number of voters must sign for a third-party or independent candidate to gain ballot access. Ross Perot appeared on all 50 state ballots as an independent in 1992 and the candidate of the Reform Party in 1996. But again, he was able to provide significant funds for his campaigns. Pat Buchanan appeared on all 50 state ballots in the 2000 election, largely on the basis of Perot's performance as the Reform Party's candidate 4 years prior. The Libertarian Party has appeared on ballots. The Green Party has also, the Constitution Party. But I think it's fair to say that this is the not the norm. In our country, it's kind of an outlier, and a lot of times these third parties emerge as a result of either one issue that fragments one of the big parties, as you saw with these Tea Party Republicans running the last couple cycles, or it's just one person who kind of starts a party based on their own platform, but the party isn't a sustainable thing that's maintained over time. So Emmett had his experience at the caucus, and there he was elected to be a delegate to the county convention, which was on April 14th, so just a couple weekends ago. And at that county convention, I stole these numbers directly from Emmett's Facebook, but I believe he took them straight from the GOP website. The 3rd District, which is most of downtown, was swept by Ron Paul, who took all 20 delegates. But the Romney, so the way the caucus works, you get your 20 delegates to send onto the state convention from the county convention, and there's also 20 alternates, so that in the situation where, you know, as Emmett pointed out to me, if the bus goes over the edge of the road and all 20 delegates are killed and unable to go, there's another 20 ready to go who are all prepared to do the same thing. So he was elected as an alternate to the state convention, so we'll see. He probably won't be going, but you never know. So anyway, all 20 delegates from downtown, the 3rd District, were swept by Ron Paul, but the Romney folks from the 3rd walked out and lost their quorum before they could elect their alternates. So they kind of gave up on having alternate positions there. The 4th District went 6 for Ron Paul, 35 for Mitt Romney. The 6th District, where Emmett is, all 42 went to Romney. The 7th, 2 for Paul, 7 for Romney. And the 9th, 3 for Paul, 8 for Romney. And he was elected to be one of the alternates. He can still go to the state convention if he wants, but it's extremely unlikely that he'll get to participate. All in all, he says, it was a very, very good experience, and I'm happy to have gone and done my best. The next part I'm going to play, we're going to talk a little bit about why he supports Ron Paul, what drove him to have this experience, and all of that.
This is the first election that I participated in. I could have voted in the last election, for Obama's election. And indeed, I was even buying into Obama's rhetoric. And
yeah, we all did.
And I know we all did. I even donated money to his campaign early on. But then I watched a documentary film about the Federal Reserve and basically realized that they're, both parties are owned by a financial system that is completely unsustainable and predatory, and it's eating itself away. And in the process, it's gotten itself into so many, I mean, they've weaseled their way into every little facet of power that they could possibly get, because they control the money that gets those people elected. And they also lobby the hell out of them once they're there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's a revolving door. And that definitely played a hand into why I consider myself a libertarian, or was looking to reach out to anything other than the two-party system. And the way I see it, the Republicans are holding the gun to your head, and the Democrats are holding the gun to your back, and there's no way out of the situation. There's nowhere to turn other mm-hmm. than to just put your foot down. Say, you know, find something that nothing will perfectly represent what you believe and what you feel, but I believe that everybody feels they lean one way more so than the other, and whether you find yourself leaning into the beliefs of a mainstream political party or one of the lesser famous constitutional party, the Green Party.
I feel like a lot of those are being pretty neatly co-opted in a lot of ways by the two big parties. I don't know if you'd say that's accurate, but because of the culture we have, you're kind of forced, as the Green Party, for example, you're forced to be given a voice in the conversation. You have to get closer to what the norm is on the supposed left. And same with, you know, on the supposed right. If you want to be Ron Paul, for instance, and be a libertarian and have views that are pretty radically different from the mainstream Republican Party in a lot of ways, you still have to make concessions to even discussing social issues that aren't a part of that. That's my main frustration with it. I mean, same with the Green Party and the Democrats, you know. There's a lot of examples on both sides. What do you think is the way for those parties to not let that happen and to be able to resist that and get any sort of say?
No, I especially have, after having gone through this whole process that I have in the last few months, I have a lot more hope than I have despair, which is incredible for me, because I am a diehard, dyed in the wool conspiracy theorist. Every day, it's all I look at. But, you know, I don't buy into everything that I read, but I have gotten completely addicted to looking into alternative sources of news and looking for story. You know, the Inlander writes, publishes a list of least heard about but most important news mm-hmm. stories. And, you know, why does it have to be once a year? That's pathetic. Why can't it be a daily thing? Mm-hmm. And it really is. When you start looking into it, and you got to deal with everybody's bias, but
it's Project Censored puts out that list,
and I think it's in multiple publications. Yeah,
it's because you have to make money to have a media for a lot of people, and the people with money have an agenda that you have to respect.
Certainly,
that's the short version of it. Yeah. You know, as it's the short version with every issue.
It's just the problem is the income gap has become so fantastically spread out.
Supposedly alternative, no one can see my obnoxious air quotes, but these supposedly alternative stories that are actually, you know, in a lot of cases important, and a lot of what gets pushed out is also anything that's nuanced at all, that isn't simple and easily digestible.
Mm-hmm.
But I do know that you're a conspiracy theorist, so it's interesting that it gave you hope. I guess my opinion is that I think that representative government, similar to what we have, can work, but not as it overlaps with, like, corporate capitalism. Mm-hmm. Would you agree with that, generally? Yeah. Do you think that it can keep working if we just, like,
Well, Thomas Jefferson said that banking institutions are more dangerous to the Republic than standing armies, or to the survival of the Republic than standing armies. Like, that may not be the exact quote, but, you know, it's a country that we live in a new modern system of slavery that's very clever, because it is so illusory. See, in the old days, slaves had to be housed and fed, and that was a very inconvenient, inefficient way to manage slaveholding, and the moneyed powers or the slaveholders or the filthy rich of the Western society realized that if they could just get everyone ensnared with debt that was always keeping them one step behind being in ownership of their own life and being their own person, that they would always have to spend the rest of their life running on the wage treadmill to pay back this debt that, you know, and I don't necessarily agree with lending or with, you know, without credit, that we wouldn't live in the society that we would do. But we all know that the debt is unpayable. It's mathematically impossible to ever pay it back. But when I learned that it was that way by design, that it was that way because the money that we use in the system of our units of exchange are basically created out of thin air. They're IOU notes. There's nothing to back them up. And the Federal Reserve is a private company. It's not a branch of the government, as the name federal would kind of imply, but it is actually a privately held company with stock traded, and
just like everything else will be soon.
Yeah, any other private company would make a product and sell it for a profit. This company makes a product and loans it for a profit because it's a bank. How do banks make money? They make loans and charge interest on those loans. Well, the loans that the Federal Reserve makes us, they are the buck stops with them. They are the source of the money. They make the money, and we gave them the sole power to make the money. They're not, you know, the money that they make is not pulled from a pool of valuable, it's not, there's no gold backing it. They just make up paper and give it to the American government in exchange for treasury bonds, which are basically IOUs saying we will pay you back with this much extra at X date. But then all of a sudden this money is created and is in circulation, and that's all there is to it. And so it's,
that's really funny.
And so it's really the interest that really sparked my, made me say, oh, shoot, like there's, you know, what are we going to do here? That every dollar that they make and that they give to us, we have to pay back to them eventually with interest. Well, where's the money going to come from to pay back that interest? Well, they're going to have to make some more money so that we can pay back that interest, but then that money's going to have interest attached to it too. And is it any wonder why this cycle creates inflation? It's just inflation is a mathematical function of the way that our money is created. It's not some natural law that, you know, things don't just get more expensive. Things don't just get more valuable or less valuable, depending on how you want to look at it. It's because of the way that our currency is based on a system of credit.
If people weren't talking about monetary policy, what were they talking about generally? What was the most popular, what was the main topic that the greatest amount of people was there
The
for?
Financial system was definitely, or the financial crisis, or you know, it's not over yet, folks. I don't think anybody would delude themselves into thinking anything's going to get better. I think, you know, my stepfather has been out of work for 8 months now, almost nine, and his is not a unique story by any stretch of the imagination. It's no secret that pretty much not one red cent of the stimulus packages and the bailouts went to any person on Main Street. It was all given to the Wall Street banks, hence the Occupy movement, and people are fed up, and I was fed up. But you were asking what were the issues for more people, and other people are fed up as well. But like I was talking with you earlier about it, being at the convention and being at the caucus was almost like watching Fox News, but if you were like in Fox News and were kind of behind the scenes, and during the commercial breaks you could pick the brains of the pundits and take the nice suits off and these people live next to you and you're not in a newsroom. And that's kind of the vibe that it had. It was a big group of people that watched television.
Okay. So the same type of fervor that you'd see.
Essentially. Hmm. You know, imagine a Glenn Beck program. Or maybe not quite that bad. Maybe not that hysterical, but...
Oh, I hope my dad listens to this. Say that. Hi, Dad. Yeah, but I understand what you mean. There's some...
Yeah, it was a lot of there was a lot of fist wagging about the gay marriage deal that we just got done with, and there's always going to be an abortion fanatic in the crowd, and you know that's not to say one way or another about that issue. My stance on abortion is very complicated. I don't know. I definitely agree that a woman has a right to choose, but I would never presume to tell a woman what to do with her body.
Thank you. I'm pretty much done with that, so...
Yeah.
We couldn't be friends.
But
I've had enough scolding. So the standard stuff that we see in the national...
In the news.
In the approved discourse was the discourse at the caucus for the most part.
It was like watching the debates. The president, you know, there were 20, probably almost 30 of them on TV. And it was pretty much watching the same thing over and over and over and over and over and over again with a few less of them each time. And essentially, the majority... came out for Romney, and they came out for Romney because he's a businessman, and we need a businessman, because if anybody can steer this business of government back on track.
Do people realize there what Bain Capital actually does? Do you think that people have an understanding?
I don't think any one of them knew that he made a majority of his money. Well, first he inherited quite a bit of his money, but he definitely capitalized on his money by buying up businesses predatorily and then liquidating them and firing tens of thousands of workers and leaving them with, you know, nowhere to go, nothing to do. I understand that business is business and ruthless measures have to be taken when the S hits the fan, but it wasn't hitting the fan in the situations that he liquidated good companies.
Yeah, I find that's the thing that frustrates me the most about that specific school of thought, if you'd like to call it that, is just this obsession with the market, the all holy market, and that somehow what Romney did for a living, and similarly, I mean, you can look at Gingrich, you can look at Obama even in some ways on the other side, but there's still, I think a lot of people, I have this argument with my dad fairly often, who have this real worship of, you know, the market and business. Like, we need a businessman in the White House. That whole attitude.
They've had a businessman in the White House for decades.
That's the only one who's ever been there is an old white businessman. Like, that's all we've ever had.
Yeah.
But, nonetheless, I think people still have this concept that business is this really glamorous, like, industrial revolution, like, manufacturing style, like, titans of industry type of thing. Whereas, really, a lot of it is just high-degree gambling and scamming, what these incredibly rich men do.
Well, and those titans of industry now feel like they're, you know, gods of the universe now, comparatively to what it was.
So I think that's a total tangent, but I find that interesting that people buy that. Like, especially people who have been screwed by corporate capitalism.
Especially
like
considering
that... So there's people there who are unemployed or who are concerned about that, but will support someone like Romney because they think it's a solution.
Well, they just see a person who's successful, but they don't really, or in my opinion, you know, I don't presume to call everyone uneducated who supports Mitt Romney. I definitely met several well-educated Romney supporters and had a lot of good discussions, and I felt... Probably if there was anything that I took out of all of this was a big appreciation for how accessible it was, how easy it was, and how much my peers and my neighbors and the people who live in my community actually will care and listen to a person who can calmly and rationally explain what they think and why they think that way. And it's not that hard for any person to recognize when a person is just, you know, repeating something that they've heard on the television or is just thinking off the top of their head and expressing what their real concerns are. Mm-hmm. And that's all that these people were doing. That's all any of us were doing. There were several, you know, there were several of them that were concerned, obnoxious air quotes, about, you know, the issues that we see on the television. And, you know, some of those issues are very important, but it would have been refreshing to have more of a dialogue, I guess. That's one thing I did kind of miss about it. And I did have dialogue with participants, the other delegates in the front row where I was sitting, and, you know, private conversations, but it wasn't in front of a microphone. It wasn't an open forum town hall kind of thing. And I kind of hoped for that.
It was a present your 2 minutes.
It wasn't even 2 minutes. In fact, one of the first orders of business that we took care of before we got to lunch at the convention was to limit the amount of time that each delegate could spend speaking in favor of their candidate to 30 seconds, because there were, you know, over 1,000 of us there, and if each and every one of us mm-hmm. had spent 2 minutes, that's 2,000 minutes.
Yeah.
That would have been a long time, and we were already there for way late, and I don't know, 30 seconds was enough. I had to chop mm-hmm. down what I'd come prepared to say, but I ultimately, what I wound up soapboxing on was the fact that Ron Paul has earned more in campaign contributions from active duty servicemen and women than any other Republican candidate, all the other Republican candidates, and Barack Obama combined, like all of them. When I learned that particular tidbit, made me raise my eyebrows, because when you consider that he's the only anti-war, expressly mm-hmm. anti-war candidate running, it only logically follows that the reason the troops will support him is because they think that see that he's the only one that isn't going to send them halfway across the world to fight and die for a war that was arbitrarily started, illegally started, undeclared, and mm-hmm. it wasn't necessarily for something that they believed in. When, you know, I have friends in the military, some dear good friends of mine, and I have conversations like this. They know more about it than I think people give them credit for. They're not just, you know, blind, trigger-pulling patriots. They, you know, they care about what their country, and they see it as a real tangible way that they might have some sort of input or effect. You know, if I can't change what's going to happen to my country, then by God, I'm going to go down bleeding for her, at least. You know, I think that that's kind of the mindset that they take, and that's certainly the mindset that I take. I just don't see joining the military right now, as far as where I'm personally at, as the most productive way that I can be of service to my country.
Because you're not serving your country. You're serving, again, this corporate capitalist aim that's hijacked your country.
Mm-hmm.
You're a thug for a company, basically, in many cases. But that's just my...
Yeah, that's not to say that the military isn't appreciated or isn't needed or they're not good people at all. It's just that they don't get to influence the wars that they get to fight in, and the only way that they can is by giving money to an anti-war candidate. You know, even that can kind of get them in trouble. Apparently, I've been seeing news recently of a Marine that was ejected from the military, discharged because he posted something critical of Obama on his Facebook or something like that. I didn't realize that their speech was limited that way to, like, apparently you can't criticize the commander-in-chief.
Yeah, that would be my only... I get what you're saying, and it definitely makes sense that they would support the anti-war candidate. It's also always good old conscientious objection. But for a lot of people, you know, a lot of people see it as their only opportunity. So that was me, your host, Taylor Weech, talking with my friend Emmett Hartley last week about his experience caucusing and representing as a delegate his precinct at the county convention for Ron Paul, and talking about why he supports Ron Paul. That part at the end I thought was really interesting, and we went on to talk about that more. I'll probably play more of it in the future when I have a little more time. But the piece that veterans support Ron Paul at higher rates, and active duty service members also, than the rest of the population, and they support him more than all other candidates combined financially. That's where I end up in the Ron Paul camp as well, personally. And I think a lot of young people specifically, and folks who you may assume are on the left, we need to find a new term for that because I don't like using it, but, you know, who have the traditional left values, which include peace, in my understanding, that's the reason I would support Ron Paul, is that his stated position is that he'll end all foreign occupation by the U.S. and also end the so-called war on drugs, which I think are two of the most wasteful ventures of all of America's wasteful ventures. I'm still undecided as to who or whether I'll vote for in the presidential election. But, you know, talking to Emmett, I did realize that the process itself is accessible. My beef with it is still that while it's accessible so that you can choose from the predestined candidates that are already chosen. So while Paul is somewhat of an outlier and he has had a grassroots rise, he also was already a congressman. You know, it's not like he was just some guy who decided, I think I'll run for president, and did it. That kind of access is still highly restricted because of the deep infiltration of money in our political system. So if you're just joining us, this is Praxis, a new-ish local politics, state and national issues show. And generally, we won't be delving this much into national politics, but I thought this was a really interesting way to show how the local affects the national and whether it does. I was glad to hear that my friend had more hope after caucusing and representing at the convention. He and I get into some pretty bleak discussions sometimes about the state of affairs, but, you know, we're both still trying to find a way to take some action to make some change. So that's kind of what this show is all about. That's what I want to talk to people about, is what action are you taking? What steps are you trying out? Are they working? So that's what you're going to hear in the future and hopefully now. So I will be posting the entirety of this interview online at kyrs.org, or possibly play more of it in the future as we move forward in the 2012 presidential election. For now, though, I want to get back to the local, and go over a few things that happened this last week. Since I have the privilege of having a show on Monday morning, we can talk about what's upcoming on the city council dockets, and city council meetings are every Monday night at 6 p.m. It's your chance to have some experience with your local representative democracy and hopefully have your voice heard there. And last week I talked about how the hearing for the new citizen initiative changes was going to be on the agenda. It was actually pushed off of the agenda because the other item was a public hearing on the non-binding resolution around gay marriage, supporting gay marriage and supporting the state law that was passed by Governor Gregoire that's now going to be, you know, petitioned to repeal through the referendum process at the state level. Councilman Snyder put forward a non-binding resolution basically just as a show of support, saying Spokane agrees that this is the right thing for our state to do. And the hearing for that was on last Monday, the 16th. There was a march organized from downtown to council chambers. And by the end of the night, there had been 5 hours of testimony on both sides. So if you're doing your math, that means until 11:30 at night, people were sticking around to testify their support or their opposition to this gay marriage issue locally. And, you know, my personal opinion on that is that it shouldn't be a political issue. I think people should have the right to do whatever they want in their love life and their personal life. But I do see the value for citizens here in knowing and having it affirmed that, like, yes, this is a safe place for you. We respect your rights in Spokane. So what ended up happening is after that 5 hours of testimony, the entire issue was tabled. So I'm going to read, she can summarize it better than I can because I wasn't there for the whole thing, from Councilwoman Amber Waldriff's website. She has a blog post about it. So I'm just going to read a section of that. So this is in Amber Waldriff's words. I'll give you a short rundown of where the meeting ended up. A 4-3 vote to defer the resolution in support of marriage equality indefinitely. I was a bit emotional at the end of the night, not necessarily about the subject matter, although I heard very emotional comments on both sides of the issue. My disappointment was about the lack of council foresight, transparency, and respect of public process. At the beginning of the meeting, Councilman Fagan made a motion, seconded by Councilmember McLaughlin, to defer the resolution, saying that it violated our council rule that we can only consider topics of concern to the city. I was very surprised, as I had never heard Mr. Fagan or other council members articulate any concerns about this in the 4 weeks since Mr. Snyder put this on our agenda. It seems a bit ironic, as Mr. Fagan brought forward a resolution just a few weeks ago about the proposed Spokane Tribe Casino on the West Plains. I suppose you could argue that both or neither of these resolutions related to city business. I'm grateful that, out of respect to the over 300 people in the room last night, the council chose to discuss this motion after taking testimony, almost 5 hours of testimony. When it came time to revisit Mr. Fagan's motion, I listened patiently to other council members' perspectives. While I can agree with the argument that we are not the decision makers on this particular topic, I was torn. Clearly, the people who wish to be married in same-sex relationships were crying out for their stories to be heard, and the stories I heard of their commitment to their partners and their experiences here in Spokane made it hard to argue that this issue does not relate to human rights in Spokane. Also, in the past, we've considered resolutions in support or opposition to statewide initiatives and referendums when there is an impact to Spokane. Later in the council debate, I was taken aback by Mr. Fagan's comment that the council members were not being respectful of his motion. The respectful thing to do would have been to brought up would have the respectful thing to do would be to have brought up concerns about the resolution last week when we all approved our meeting agenda. Transparency is key to the council's relationship with the public. If we're going to take up an issue, we should take it up. If we want to defer an item indefinitely or table it before it goes on the agenda, we have that option. So that's Amber Waldrop's blog talking about Councilmember Fagan, seconded by McLaughlin, and then eventually voted to table the issue after the testimony had taken place. And I think the important issue here is what she states at the end, that it's a matter of process, where they have a process in place to approve the agenda, to make sure that the right things come before the public in the meeting, the right things come up to be voted on. And if that wasn't one of the right things, then that should have been decided way in advance, rather than sort of having this show of, I mean, the way I would have interpreted that, were I a person who came down to testify, was, yes, let's hear your voice. But at the end of the day, your voice doesn't really matter because we're just going to table the issue. I don't think it's a very respectful way to do it. I think it's unfortunate that it happened that way. I also think it's unfortunate that the citizen initiative vote was deferred, because that's something I'm very interested in and will definitely be following on this show. My first show on the 2nd, so earlier this month, I talked to Kai Hushka of Envision Spokane about this process. And basically, what's going on is that, once again, Councilmember Fagan and Councilmember Salvatore are sponsoring legislation to make changes to the citizen initiative process, which is basically the citizens' most direct way to legislate in Spokane. You can put forward basically any type of initiative that you think should change and be made into law, and if you collect enough signatures, it will appear on the ballot for voters. And, you know, many issues have utilized this process in the past. Significantly, pro-legalization of marijuana campaigns, really notably, was Envision Spokane's Community Bill of Rights in 2008 and again in 2009 and 2011. But so basically, these changes, they say that they are to make it more in compliance with state law, but in fact, it's intended, and Mike Fagan has been quoted as saying he has Envision Spokane in mind, it's intended to make it more difficult for citizens to complete this process. So we'll be following that in the future, because it's so important to preserve your right to do that, to directly influence legislation by writing it yourself and going through a process with the city attorney or direct filing. That's what's at stake, is they want to change the direct filing procedure. So if you want to read more about that, it's online at SpokaneCity.org. They have the full language of the proposed ordinance, the current ordinance. You can also find the state law there. The good news is, no matter what happens with that vote, Envision Spokane has already filed their, they filed under the old rules last week, at least last week, because just Saturday at Earth Day, they were out there with their petitions to gather signatures to get it on the next ballot. So, and I know a couple other initiative efforts are scrambling right now to get all of their prerequisites met before this potential change happens. Now on the 30th is when that vote will be. So if you're interested in this issue, you have a whole week to research it and show up to testify at 6 p.m. at City Council Chambers, which is the lower level of City Hall on Spokane Falls Boulevard, right behind the mall. If you've never been to a city council meeting, it's a really interesting experience to have. So that on the 30th, that'll be going on. Tonight on the agenda is the mayor's new proposed water rate structure. We've been talking about water a lot in Spokane, I feel like, the last couple of years. And last year, possibly the year before, former Councilman Richard Rush put forward a new water rate structure that was known as a progressive water rate structure, meaning that if you use less water, less units of water, you pay less per unit of water. So it's a conservation structure. And therefore, you know, if you have that lush acre green lawn in the summer and you use more units of water, you pay more per unit of water that you use. So basically, it's incentivizing conservation while providing a sustainable source of revenue for the city to run the water system that we have. That there was a big hoopla about that, if you don't remember. A lot of people were very angry about it, saying that their water rates would go up. In fact, many, I think most, according to the study I saw, people in Spokane's water rates would go down under that model. But people love their lawns, I suppose, and there was a big outrage about it. So now the new mayor, David Condon, has put forward a new water structure that is being voted on tonight. So basically, this is direct from the press release from the city. The proposal includes a return to the four rate tiers as they existed in 2010, making the rates more understandable while continuing to encourage conservation. The current system has five tiers that charge significantly more as water use increases, as I just explained. They're also increasing the base charge on the water from $12.32 to $13.61 a month. So your water rate will go up no matter what due to the base charge. And then it's a significant reduction in the rate increase for water use. So he's proposing an inflation-only increase from the 2010 rates. Our friend Inflation again from that interview with Emmett talking about our monetary system. But because of inflation, we're increasing our water rates from the 2010 rates. So it's a 4.5% increase from 2010 to 2012. And it replaces a 16% increase in consumption rates for 2012 approved by the prior city council. And they're going to move to monthly billing in the summer as a pilot project so that bills will be more predictable. So that's what's being voted on tonight. There's some data on the city website that you can look at to compare the old plan to the new plan. If water is something you care about a lot, if you'd like to have a say in that, there will be a hearing and you can see the vote tonight. So that's what's going on at the city level right now, in addition to all the usual business. But I'm really interested to see how this citizen initiative thing turns out. I think Envision Spokane is doing a lot of work to mobilize people around the issue, get them educated, and most of all, get them to show up on the 30th. Because if you don't show up, then your voice isn't heard. That's how democracy works. Sometimes even if you do show up, your voice isn't heard, but there's a lot of people working on that to change that. I'm trying to think of what else has been happening this week. Something, this might just turn into a miniature rant, but that's what may happen. On Saturday morning, it was Earth Day on Main Street, and it went really well. Congratulations to the Earth Day organizers and everyone who showed up. It was a really great day. It was a beautiful day. I noticed as I was walking across downtown, though, from my house on the west side of downtown to Earth Day on the east side, that indeed, the Cover the Night campaign by Kony 2012 had been successful, and there were Kony 2012 posters everywhere. And if you haven't been on the internet, or if you are oblivious to this story, basically Invisible Children, a nonprofit group who focuses on child armies in Africa, has come up with a campaign called Kony 2012, basically intended to oust Joseph Kony. One general who supposedly that will solve the entire problem that's going on there. And there were posters everywhere. They had an action on the 20th called Cover the Night, in which everyone was instructed to put up posters all over the town that they lived in. So that's what was happening. They were pretty successful in downtown Spokane because there were a ton of posters. And one of the specific posters depicted the Democratic donkey and the Republican elephant kind of nuzzling one another. And it said, "One thing we can all agree on." I have a lot of problems with this campaign, and one of them is that poster, because we're not all Democrats or Republicans, first of all, and not everyone can agree on the strategy they're encouraging. And that strategy is basically that individuals on a local level need to band together to tell the UN Security Council and the US to intervene and depose Joseph Kony. So it's encouraging interventionist policies on our behalf as this great humanitarian measure that we need to take. And we've already seen countless times that this method doesn't really work, I think. I mean, taking out the one dictator, we have to get bin Laden, that whole philosophy simply doesn't really work, because it's not just one person. It's an entire system and a system of systems that creates horrible situations like the one in Uganda. But you can't just pin it to one person and then turn it into this large-scale military intervention, and then through very appealing propaganda, they have a 29-minute video that went viral that hundreds of millions of people have watched now, basically encouraging that solution to a problem and saying that it's the right one and that if you're a good person, you'll support it. So I think it's really interesting. It's been interesting to speak to people about it, about what they think about it, and we'll see where it goes. Obviously, it has a local following, so we will see what happens with that. And the posters are mostly gone now. My other beef was a more superficial one. It was that there was a lot of litter due to this on Earth Day. So that was my own tree hugger problem with the whole thing. But that's what's been going on lately. And thanks for tuning in. Thanks to Emmett Hartley for agreeing to be interviewed about his experience with caucusing and the county convention. We discussed going to the state convention together and possibly to both of them, because I mean, normal citizens can go to these, and I'd be really curious to see both what the Democratic state convention looks like and what the Republican state convention looks like. So if we can get our resources together to get to Seattle, the two of us may be going on a convention tour, and that will certainly appear on this show. It's something we talked about. I wish I could have been at the county convention, but I'm glad that he shared his story with me so that I could share it with you. You've been listening to Praxis, which means, the point where theory becomes action. It's a Greek term, and that's what I'm looking to explore here. I'm your host, Taylor Weech. Thank you for your patience if you were here at the beginning of the broadcast for those technical difficulties. This is community radio. We're all volunteers, and it is a learning process for me. So thanks for your patience. I hope you have a great Monday, and keep tuning in Monday mornings at 10 a.m. Thanks.